buildings.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Monsters of the Midday. Gideon Hamilton in for Mark and Dusty today. Hope you're having a great start to your day and appreciate you spending some of it with us. We've got a loaded show for you. We're going to talk plenty of OU Texas during today. Going to talk some high school football. Cameron Jordan's going to join us a little bit later on. Carson Cunningham from KOCO Channel 5 will join us. Joe Bettner from the Norman Transcript to talk some Sooner football. We're going to start things off, though, with Joe Cook from Inside Texas to get us ready for the Red River game coming up this weekend. You can follow Joe at JosephCook89. That's important for a reason I'm going to tell you here in just a little bit. First of all, I want to say welcome in to Joe. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Doing great, guys. I'm just about to head up to Dallas from Austin right now. So
all right, very good.
It's always a good day when I get to do that.
Again, the reason why I mentioned your Twitter is I think this is a really valuable resource for Sooner fans that are trying to do a deep dive before the game to understand. You'll go through several plays from the previous game for Texas. I wanted you to talk about the thinking behind that and how much that helps you being able to cover the team, because when we will do post-game shows immediately following the conclusion of the game, it always feels so inadequate because I always wish that I could go back and look and see what happened during a scenario that happens in the game. So I wonder if you could talk about doing this for Inside Texas, your Twitter feed, to help educate fans a little bit more and yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think starting back in 2018 is when I started doing it, and there's somebody who uploads the games to YouTube, and I'm able to go and create GIFs from that game and make them into a Twitter moment. And that's how I basically rewatch the game, is I'll go and I'll try and look at the certain moments of the game. And, you know, I'll try to put into what I think is pretty much layman's terms what's going on the football field. And so if somebody has a responsibility, like a linebacker is supposed to be playing in the flat, and he gets his eyes drawn in by a running back and doesn't play the tight end going in the flat, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can describe that with jargon and lingo that, you know, I'd like to think I know, but I kind of know the Queen's English a little bit easier. So I'll go ahead and just kind of put that into common terms. I'll do good plays. I'll do bad plays. I'll do some funny plays. I'll try to link back to something that may have happened earlier in the game. And it's just a way to really kind of keep all my thoughts on a particular game and the X's and O's as they happen, put them all into one place, and then boom, right there, have the visual there to see it. So I basically try to do it for every single Texas game. It's a whole lot of fun. It gets a lot of interaction, and I think it tries to make things simple what may sometimes be really, really complex on the football field.
No, it's a really great resource, and again, would encourage people to check out his Twitter feed. It's at JosephCook89. Before we talk about the Longhorns this season and what has happened, it's always important to provide some context, because seasons are evaluated based on, a lot of times, not what actually happens, but based on perception and expectations going into the season and then what happens after that. Coming into this year, what were the areas of legitimate excitement and concern for Texas football?
The areas of excitement and concern are kind of in the same place. If you remember, Texas had to fire 7 assistant coaches after last year's 7-5 regular season. They brought in Mike Yurcich, who helped Mason Rudolph, James Washington, all those guys go on to prolific careers at Oklahoma State. Didn't call plays at Ohio State, but was a big part of Justin Fields having a big time. Then they brought in Chris Ash, former Rutgers head coach, longtime colleague of Tom Herman, to be the new coordinators. And there was a lot of excitement about both those guys coming in. You know, Tom Herman relinquishing play calling to Mike Yurcich. Yurcich's ideas about throwing downfield, bringing some of the stuff that helped make Justice Hill, James Washington, Mason Rudolph, and bring it over to guys like Keontae Ingram, Brennan Eagles, and Sam Ehlinger. Same with Chris Ash. I mean, last year, I think anybody who watched the Texas defense understood that it was really bad in a lot of areas. So there was a lot of excitement that those two guys were going to come in. And remember, these hires were made in December and January 2019, 2020.
Right, right.
So there was a lot of excitement about those guys. And then, you know, the rest of the year happened. Texas was robbed of, like many schools around the country, Texas was robbed of its 15 spring practices of summer drills. And so the word from the program was, you know, we've met, we've studied, we've done all these things, we know what the system is, and we know all these new installations. But anybody, any coach will tell you, any fan will tell you, it doesn't really matter until you're able to go out and rep it. And so that was the biggest concern, honestly, after about March when everything shut down, is these guys didn't really have much time to rep this new defense, this tweak on the offense. And I think obviously in the second game against Texas Tech, where it was just a total shootout, it showed. I mean, it's a new tackling system, one that even Alex Grinch uses, the Atavis rugby quote tackling system.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was flailing all over the field. It was shored up a little bit in the second game, but those were the main concern, optimistic areas and concerns. The coordinators, what they came and brought in, but the concerns were what they weren't able to hands-on install during the spring.
Our guest is Joe Cook from Inside Texas, does great breakdowns on their games, and Inside Texas will be a fun place to go for OU fans to learn a little bit more about the Longhorns. Before we get to the game this weekend, I have to bring up what had to be, I would imagine, one of the more memorable finishes that you've ever covered in that game against Texas Tech. How wild was that? How inexplicable was it that Texas, first of all, was even in that position, but then came back and won from 15 down with basically a little over two to play?
Yeah, that is something that I don't think I've ever seen. You know, I've followed Texas football since I was a little kid, starting in the early 2000s, basically right at 2000, and I don't think I've seen a comeback like that in a long time. Tom Herman is not particularly successful at playing from behind during his tenure at Texas, and so basically when that last long touchdown run for Texas Tech took place, I was starting to write, well, all right,
yeah,
that's one and one. You know, the season has taken a very strange turn very quickly. And then Sam Ehlinger happened. They started throwing the ball downfield, got a very, very fortunate bounce on an onside, and actually at the very end held the defense. I'm sure that if the Jones AT&T Stadium had anywhere close to its 60,000 capacity, even for a, 11 a.m. game, that place was going to be going crazy. But, you know, that's basically why so many fans have this undoubted and just undying trust of Sam Ehlinger, that no matter what is going on the field situation-wise, whether it's a slog, a shootout, anything like that, they believe that he's going to be able to help out and get that team to win the game. So it was very impressive for him to do that. It's not the preferred way of winning for Texas, obviously, but they were very, very thankful to get out of there with the victory.
I we can use all the generalities that we want to, and, you know, based on how strange this year is, you want to try to bank every single win that you can get. People have already talked about OU basically, you know, being three games behind some of these other teams that they've lost to with two conference losses. How important is this game for Texas and their program?
Oh, this is huge. It's unbelievably huge. I think it's huge for both programs because I don't think anybody really wants to cross the precipice of what a loss means up in Norman or in Austin. You know, in Austin, it means probably sitting on the outside of the Big 12 title picture in year four of Tom Herman, mm-hmm. in year four of Sam Ehlinger, and it'll just kind of show a lack of progress ever since that 10-4 2018 season. And that is not something Texas fans are basically ready to put up with anymore with Tom Herman. And then on the other side, Oklahoma, you know, this is now fully Lincoln Riley's program. He has run it. It is in his image. He's got his coaches, his coordinators. He's doing what he wants to do. His quarterback, you know, all that different stuff. And 0-3 start in conference would spell a huge problem up in Norman. So I think both fan bases, both teams, both schools are probably a little fearful of what really lies on the other side of a loss, and are going to do their best this weekend, of course, to avoid it as much as they can.
Well, we'll continue to follow all of your information from Inside Texas. Joe, keep up the great work, and thanks so much for making time for us this afternoon. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Joe Cook, Inside Texas again. Joseph Cook, 89, and he will run a bunch of clips from that game. So you might want to follow his feed if OU wins. Might be able to kind of bask in that a little bit. I was talking with Craig about this before. The defense has struggled for, over a decade now for OU. Part of that is it's Big 12 football. These are the schemes. You're going to give up yards and points. It's disappointing to see. It's frustrating to watch from a fan's perspective. But even after the first two losses, and I don't know, maybe even after this game, I don't know if I can look at, I would be able to look at OU and say they're not any good. And I think that's probably counter to the way a lot of people would think, but I do think that there is a lot of talent on this team. I haven't had an opportunity to talk to you about how really strange it has been for me watching them lose to Kansas State and Iowa State when, and I'm not saying that I'm not wrong, that when it looks like they're better than who they're playing against.
Yeah, no, certainly a lot of it is playing down to the level of their competition, especially in the second half. Second half is when a lot of that has happened in Gideon. I think that it's hard for me to say that this is the worst OU defense I've seen, because we've seen some really bad ones.
Oh, yeah.
I think kind of what's happening is that the offense is just not in a position to bail them out every time like they have been under Baker Mayfield, under Kyler, under Jalen. And that's not to say Spencer Rattler, you know, is having issues that are just beyond the pale, because those are issues that freshman quarterbacks have. So in the run game too, not getting any run game going, that's going to make it really difficult for your defense to be effective. So they have a complementary football problem. It's not just a defense problem.
Big three, obviously OU, Texas. We're going to talk plenty about that. We'll get into the NBA with the Los Angeles Lakers, an opportunity to win yet another NBA championship, first in a while, but last in a long line of them for that incredible franchise. And also number three, COVID spreading throughout the Tennessee organization and what that might mean. Eventually, they're going to run out of free dates. This is my opinion. They're going to run out of free dates, and you will have to go by a win percentage at the end of the year. Not everybody is going to play the same number of games. That's how things are going to work once they run out of bye weeks where they can reschedule things. So, and I think that will happen for maybe a couple more teams. I don't want to go overboard there, but certainly for Tennessee, it sounds like they're going to be dealing with competitive balance for long enough to where they might have to drop a game or two. It's going to be a really busy show for us. Told you a little bit earlier, Cameron Jordan's going to join us to talk about high school sports and how difficult it has been to get any kind of consistency there for coaches, kids, parents, schools. That's going to be something I'm really interested to talk with him about. That's in our 1 o'clock hour. Carson Cunningham from KOCO Channel 5. We'll talk about OSU, still a mirage at this point based on who they have and have yet to play, or is there something real there? We'll obviously talk about OU football as well, and Joe Bettner will talk Sooner for sports with us at 1:35. So we are locked and loaded today, and we've got a bunch of stuff to get to. You can obviously let your opinion out, 460-9957, 460-WWLS, toll-free statewide or nationwide at 888-285-9957. Whatever is on your mind, we will get into that. You know, I always talk about NBA basketball with you, but we can dive into Sooners and Longhorns this weekend too. Man, it is I mean, it's easy for us to say what the game means here. If you're OU, no matter what situation it's been when they have lost, I'm always the guy saying, look, they dropped two spots after a loss. They're going to find a way to get back in, and they always do. And I still think there's an opportunity based on who's good right now and who they haven't played yet. I think there's a chance that they could still win out and get in the Big 12 championship game. But if they lose this weekend, there's obviously no chance, because they're going to be four games better than some of these teams, and they're just not going to lose that many games. You know, Kansas State, Iowa State, OSU, whatever the case may be. That being said, it's pretty important when you have a game here that's going to determine whether or not you have something to play for the rest of the way. And I think that probably goes for Texas too.
That's right. Both teams are in this spot, but yeah, certainly, because you have to think of, okay, we're crossing this OU Texas threshold of the season under 500, which would be, you know, then you're looking at the rest of the season at that point. So certainly it's kind of a little bit of uncharted territory for the OU program.
You think Texas is any good? Because I kind of don't. I think their offense is dangerous enough to where they can compete with a team that has a bad defense. And obviously, Texas's defense struggled mightily against Texas Tech before Bowman got hurt in that K-State
game. Gideon, I don't know if you saw these Pro Football Focus. You know, they do these grades every single week. And one of the things they grade is tackling and missed tackles. And three of the worst schools in the whole nation are Vanderbilt. On top of them is Oklahoma. Ahead of them is Texas. I mean, these are so you know these might be two of the worst defenses in college football. Yeah. At least they've graded out as such so far.
Yeah, I had OU 59-45 this weekend. I do think it'll be somewhere in that neighborhood.
So take the over is what you're saying.
Yeah,
I think the total is 72. I mean that I'd hammer that all day.
Yeah, I think they're going to get pretty close there by halftime. Guys will be just running wide open.
Yeah.
At least that's what I thought. And I thought OSU was going to score a bunch against Tulsa, and then Spencer Sanders gets hurt, and they score one touchdown. So things happen. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more with you. 460-995-7460. WWLS. We'll get to the rest of the headlines in the world of sports. Gideon Hamilton, Matt Ravis, the Monsters of the Midday, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal.
Breaking sports news happens.
Gideon Hamilton here with you. Thanks for joining us today. You can give us a phone call, 460-9957, whatever you want to talk to in the world of sports. You old enough to go through the Sum 41 phase?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely went through the Sum 41 phase. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. They were big for a minute or two there.
Yeah, I thought I could play guitar whenever I could play a Sum 41 song, too.
That's right. They will give you that belief. What are your thoughts on OSU so far this season? Defense has been good.
Really impressive.
I think they, that Tulsa win against UCF is better for them. UCF could go, 6-4 this year, so I don't know how good they are. I think that was at least encouraging. The next four games are going to be where I, choose whether or not to buy into OSU football this year.
Yeah, we'll learn a lot about them. This is their conference to win, I think, right now. I was a big fan of OSU coming into the year. I picked them to win the Big 12 because of OU's freshman at quarterback, because of the questions on defense, and so far that's playing out. But like you said, OSU has, the easy schedule so far. We'll find out what they're all about. But Illingworth has been impressive, worked through some stuff. I agree with you. That defense, I think, is arguably the most impressive part about them.
So, the four-game segment that we're talking about here is going to be, the meat of who's good right now in the conference. Baylor is okay. That's going to be their first game in Waco, and then they're going to host Iowa State and Texas before they go to Kansas State. Right now, Iowa State and Kansas State, based on their conference records, are two of those teams that are neck and neck with OSU. Again, I think it's more likely that there is a two-loss team that plays in the Big 12 championship game than there is an undefeated team that plays in it, because everybody's skill level is close enough to the same, and these teams are playing teams in places that would lead me to believe that maybe there's not going to be a team with an O on the right side of their record. So we'll see. Liked what I've seen so far from OSU, winning in tough circumstances, and obviously the way that defense has played so far this year. Anybody else in the conference that you isn't a total poser right now? Because I get the feeling there are several really talented players and position groups throughout the conference right now. But if you told me that, hey, Iowa State and Kansas State are going to play each other for the Big 12 championship, I would say that is probably unlikely.
Yeah, no, I just don't see another team that I like you said. I mean, there are good position groups across teams, but there's not that complete team. I like parts of Iowa State. I like parts of TCU, but I just think overall that this conference is just pretty weak this year.
Yeah.
I just think it's a very weak conference.
Yeah. Okay. We'll find out as we go along. I'm inclined to agree with you. I think there's a couple of teams that can find another gear and hit their stride. I think based on offensive talent, Oklahoma State is one of those teams. Same thing with Oklahoma, obviously. Texas has some weapons, but just defensively, the team that probably I think stands out to a lot of people just because they do have somewhat of a defensive fundamental, and I understand completely who they've played. I'm not totally sold on it just yet. You know how how tentative I've been on OSU's defense, even though we know all these guys and we know how good they are. And I'll tell you if they're any good here after their seventh game. But because they do have that fundamental and a lot of these other teams don't, for when they click into high gear, that's why some folks favor, including you, I would imagine, favor OSU right now, or did at the beginning of the season. Got NFL football a little bit later on tonight. Speaking of that, Matt's fantasy nemesis will join us.
We're gonna have a little fun
coming up here in a tough circumstance with Jake Daniels, who's going to join us in our next segment. If you don't know Jake, a lot of people that listen to sports talk radio, they love them some hard rock music, me included, and Jake runs The Cat, Rock 100.5, The Cat, an institution here. And, of course, we lost a major worldwide superstar a couple of days ago in Eddie Van Halen. So Jake's going to give us his perspective there, and we'll get into a little bit of football with Jake there at the end. But for all you Hard Rock fans, you Van Halen fans, you don't want to miss the next segment when Jake joins us to talk a little bit about that and his memories of Mr. Van Halen. NFL a little bit later on tonight, Tampa Bay and Chicago. Turns out this is a pretty competitive game. It looks like it's going to be anyway.
I think when the Bears went 3-0, Gideon, I'm like, okay, this is the weakest 3-0 of all time. And I played the Colts last week. I think the Colts are a pretty good team. I think that's a Super Bowl contender. So I think the Colts are a Super Bowl contender. I think that defense is the best in the league. I think Phillip Rivers he gives them a lot of poise back there. But anyways, as far as tonight goes, let's see what the Bears are made of. If they can come out and handle the Bucks, who I think have some big time weaknesses that can be taken advantage of, then they might be for real too.
Best 3-1 team in the league right now, is it still Baltimore? I would be inclined to say yes. The Rams have gotten a little bit better as the season has gone along. The Browns, I'm not a believer in. The Colts, obviously, you mentioned, I'm not there yet with them. I need to see them beat a couple of top flight teams this year before I hop on that bandwagon. But best 3-1 team right now in the league, you think it's still the Ravens?
I think you probably have to give them the edge there, just based on last season, and you know they only lost to the Chiefs, so you can't really penalize them too much. But the Colts and the Rams are also really impressive to me. I mean, I think we got too far down on Sean McVay last year. Mm-hmm. He still never had a losing season as a coach. He's still a really good coach.
Yeah. I do like the Rams. That division's going to be really hard. I hate to say this to people who are going to go crazy after the Cardinals beat the Jets this weekend, that Arizona has a chance in that division. They still have only played that one division game, and I think they're in for kind of a rough road. I said that after they were 2-0. So you can
how much of a loss is Sam Darnold for the Jets? I'm really trying to want. I like the kid. I like what he's made of. I like his character. I think a lot of the Jets' problems are Adam Gase related.
I don't think they're going to start winning now that he's not playing.
Yeah, no.
For Jets fans at this point in the season, I think they would probably rather. Tank for Trevor. Do you think the Jets would rather go 1-15 than 7-9 right now?
Absolutely. Okay. I think absolutely right. they would.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
At this point, you're so far down that road. Don't be mediocre. We know what you are. You're less than mediocre. So just stick to your bearings.
Darnold is one of those guys that people keep wanting to believe in for whatever reason, and it's just it's not going to happen. The counterpoint there, and you can argue about some of the physical gifts and just more sheer talent here, and I'm sure you would. But the counterpoint there is a lot of people thought the same thing or worse about Josh Allen.
Yeah, no doubt. No, that's absolutely right. There's a bunch of other quarterbacks you could point to who have been able to pull up their game, and Josh Allen. I mean, has there been a more impressive ascendance than his? Talk about how much better he's gotten as a passer coming out of college, kid. I mean, he has made that leap like nobody else I've ever seen. He's pretty incredible. I think Sam Darnold will probably make a good backup for somebody with a chance to be a starter again someday, but it's hard to succeed on the Jets. It just is.
This is low-hanging fruit, but the NFC East this year, I mean, it is sort of ridiculous when you look up this far into the season. and see all those teams struggle. And by, you know, NFL rule, they will have to play each other twice. So there's going to be some teams that win some of these games. But it is, it is sort of ridiculous.
We see a 7-9 team get into the playoffs from that division.
You very well could.
I mean,
yeah,
it's,
you very well could.
It's been ugly.
If they split with each other, the problem is that you can see one of them. You can see one of these teams taking two against the Giants and the Redskins, so that kind of vaults them a little bit to above 500. But man, I thought the bottom part of that, particularly Washington, was going to be not competitive for a division. But
based on the move that they just made with Dwayne Haskins moving out, I mean, so if you make that kind of move, benching Dwayne Haskins and bringing in Kyle Allen, I don't know how you can go back on that for the rest of the season. So I think they're kind of waving the white flag already at this point in the year.
Yeah, that's tough to do with a top 10 pick. You know,
but it's like, what did you expect to happen, right? What did you think was going to happen? I think that they probably had an inkling that they were going to make this move at some point, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Baseball a little bit later on today, game 3, Braves and Marlins, as Atlanta looks to continue their dominance in that series. Oakland, man, that was a fun one yesterday against the MLB's biggest villain, the Strohs, to keep themselves alive there. Yankees down 2-1 to Tampa Bay. That one is a little bit later on this evening. That Braves-Marlins game, by the way, that'll be going on while we're on the air, so we'll be able to give you an update on the first couple innings. And then the Dodgers will take on the San Diego Padres. The Bellinger play last night on Tatis. That's what playoff baseball is all about, isn't it?
That was amazing. That was incredible. And these two teams don't seem to enjoy each other's presence very much.
No, I would say not. And that kind of amplifies things a little bit more also. Okay, coming up next, Jake Daniels from the Cat is going to join us. We'll talk a little football with him, but we'll mainly talk about the passing of Eddie Van Halen for all you classic rock fans. Cameron Jordan's going to join us a little bit after 1 o'clock to talk about the nightmare that is high school sports scheduling in this day and age, and also give us the latest of who's going to play this weekend or not. We'll also look a little bit on down the road towards some of those championship scenarios. Carson Cunningham's going to join us at 1:20. We'll talk some OSU, OU football, and then Joe Bettner will talk Sooner Sports with us at 1:35 before we hand the baton to the Ultimate. I'm Gideon Hamilton, Matt Ravis along for the ride as well. You're listening to the Monsters of the Midday right here on the Sports Animal.
Your source for
2.1 FM, WWLS, the Sports Animal. Gideon Hamilton in today. Hope you're having a great day out there as we get set to head into OU Texas weekend. But we're going to switch gears a little bit here. One of our great artists in all of really pop culture unfortunately passed away earlier this week. And I wanted to get one of our good friends on. Of course, everybody knows what Rock 100.5 The Cat is. They're our sister station. We're up here in the same building. And the gentleman that runs that station joins us now. His name is Jake Daniels. Jake, thanks so much for taking some time for us today. This was a big blow. You know, the hits in 2020 just kind of keep on coming. But I wanted to start off here with your personal remembrances of Eddie Van Halen and the group Van Halen and what they meant to you as not only a young man hearing them for the first time, but also as you started your professional music career as well.
Well, thank you, Gideon. I appreciate you offering me the chance to talk here on the Sports Animal. And I know we're all family in the building and work together. And just glad to chime in and talk a little bit about Eddie Van Halen. You know, my experience is much like everybody else's, you know, growing up in the 80s and, you know, a kid of MTV and also listening to The Cat growing up as well. Mm-hmm. You know, my fond memories were riding my bike over to TGNY right across the street from the station,
right.
You know. And actually, I swear, it's true story. I got a Van Halen Fair Warning 8-track out of the dollar bin, and that's really when it started. And then going back to the albums before that, and then just growing up listening to Van Halen, of course, my experience, like a lot of people's in Oklahoma, was real religious parents, and obviously the diabolical endorsement of El Diablo with Running with the Devil did not help. You know, I actually got all my records and 8-tracks taken away, but eventually got them back. And, you know, the whole story, you know, is just that, you know, that experience, how it related to our lives, you know, what we remember mm-hmm. when we were younger, much like sports. You know, we all have fond memories of Billy Sims running the ball for OU, and sure. the same goes for music, too. You know, music is life. Sports are life, is life for a lot of people, and, you know, you just remember that time, where you were at, your feelings, you know, what you were going through. Just, it was that emotional connection, I think, and almost made it, you know, a little bit more personal, too. And then I had the chance of actually talking to Eddie Van Halen in the 90s, and that even brought it full circle, too, because, you know, just being a fan of music and loving music growing up and playing music and trying to be a guitar player or mm-hmm. a drummer early on in my life, it just was one of those things where I was always fanboy. So working at the station gave me opportunity to have access to these people. And I remember one time talking to Eddie Van Halen on the phone, and this was like in the 90s, Gideon. And honestly, I don't remember all the details of it because it was 30 years ago or whatever, but the conversation was basically, I think, talking about a Van Halen album, maybe some of the Sammy drama that had yeah. Had transpired or whatever. And I actually got him to, I swear, I still got it to this day, and I'll email it to you or maybe play it on the air this afternoon on the cap, but got Eddie Van Halen to say, "Hi, this is Eddie Van Halen, and even I am inspired by Jake Daniels' guitar mastery."
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
Those little things like that, you know, that my experience is kind of the twofold, you know, as a fan and also on a professional side working on radio promoting his music. So I don't know. I know everybody's got a connection to music too. So
how much did Eddie change the game for music and specifically lead guitar that followed? I heard a couple of stories yesterday. Tom Kiefer said he was in the car with his kid the first time that he heard Van Halen, and he said, "Dad, does he need two picks to play like that?" And then I heard another musician that was listening, and they said, "Who are the guys playing guitar? Because surely one guy could not make that sound by himself." How much was he able to, we talk about athletes all the time, Jake, that make people raise their game, and you know that sport is going to have to be played differently after they come along. What was that like after Eddie?
Well, you know, a lot like sports, I mean, musicians kind of are athletes. You know, drummers are really physical, and even with the guitars, you know, it's a hands thing. It's a fingers thing. It's mobility. It's like catching the ball in a way, you know, there's technique involved. And, you know, Eddie Van Halen didn't invent, you know, the hand tapping and things
right.
like that. That predated him, but he was really the one, I think it was the force of Van Halen in general at the time, you know, because you're talking the mid 70s and, you know, just the force of Van Halen that put him on the stage. And that gave him that spotlight. And because of MTV, we really got he became a celebrity because of his playing. He didn't really invent guitar, but he was amazing at it.
Yeah.
But it was the force of Van Halen and the amazing songs that they wrote and his amazing solos. And, you know, he was just a gifted musician all around, you know. And I'm not taking anything away from Eddie because everybody reveres him. It's obvious, you know. It's mm-hmm. like, I was thinking about this yesterday, too. It's like, you know, we all remember when Kurt Cobain died in the 90s, you know, and, you know, it's kind of that same thing, except we didn't have the internet back then. We had to watch it on MTV News, mm-hmm. and then it took forever for the news to spread, and then the other day it took like 30 minutes for the world to know.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. By the way, if you're searching around, the guys from Van Halen actually visited the Cat in 1978, and there's some pictures of them there in that studio around a microphone that's pretty cool. One of the unfortunate benefits of this, I remember when Neil from Rush passed away, but one of the benefits from these legends unfortunately being no longer with us is it does kind of rejuvenate interest in their music, and it brings awareness to a whole new generation of listeners that sort of discover things on their own. What are some of the more underappreciated moments of Van Halen, Jake, that are personal favorites of yours that didn't maybe necessarily get the airplay that some of their big hits got, but you thought were pretty strong?
Well, I can tell you, I mean, just I was thinking about this as well, and it's funny that you brought up, you know, music discovery and just saying how, you know, back in the 90s, we didn't have the internet. Now we do have the internet, but it's kind of crazy, too, to think about that the real form of music discovery these days is somebody passing away, you know? I mean, yeah, it's crazy to think about that. But from to answer your question, it's like, you know, the past couple of days, I've gone back and listened to stuff I haven't listened to in a long time. And, you know, I have most of the Van Halen records, like, on vinyl. And I do listen to a lot of Van Halen, but there's a lot of stuff that I really didn't pay attention to, like Van Halen 3. And honestly, I was blown away by it. I mean, I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of Gary Cherone in Van Halen. Right. I loved his extreme, you know, but the last song in that Van Halen 3 was one that Eddie actually sang on. So a lot of people think of Eddie as a guitar player. He was also a vocalist. If you ever saw him live, he always sang backup vocals. And if you know the Van Halen story, Gideon, he was actually the one singing at the beginning, but he really wasn't that front man.
Right.
They found Diamond Dave, and the rest is history, you know?
I still remember where I was exactly on the road driving the first time I heard Eruption. I know it's been talked about a lot over the last couple of days, but is that a cliche to say that that was sort of his welcome to the world type of moment that really caught everybody off guard, Jake?
Oh, yeah, it did. But, you know, in Southern California in the early 70s, they were tearing up clubs and backyard parties. And you know, you mentioned that they were actually in the Cat studio over on South Shield. This was late 70s. Mm-hmm. I've had this CD forever, probably 10, 15 years, maybe even longer. It's the Oklahoma Jam Van Halen set from 1978.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible!
Clock on the cat.
Awesome, that's so awesome. We'll have to tune in. Jake Daniels from Rock 100.5, the Cat, our sister station, nice enough to join us right now. Now, Jake, we really appreciate the memories, man. But there's one other thing I have to talk to you about before I let you go, and Matt Ravis is going to have to exit the studio because he refuses to listen to this. Jake is one of our more adamant fantasy football players and has been for a number of years now. And Matt was telling me the unfortunate tale of how he ran into Jake's team a couple of weeks ago and about how you guys are pretty formidable. Who's helping you out this year, Jake?
Oh, in fantasy football, I don't know how it happened. And usually, you know, it's like a standard template for fantasy football managers or coaches or owners or whatever. To try to get that quarterback receiver tandem, mm-hmm. and for the first time in 20 something years, on and off of playing fantasy football at the station, I finally got the first round draft pick, and I picked Christian McCaffrey. Go figure on that. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a sort of irony on that first year, and then I lose him after one game or whatever. But I actually got Russell Wilson, Lockett, and DJ Metcalf.
Oh my
DJ
gosh,
Metcalf, and that's my. I was going for the trifecta. Some people do quarterback, running back, receiver. I just ended up in the draft like that, picking those three guys, and it felt good, and I've been doing okay.
Yeah, reaping the rewards ever since.
We are currently tied atop the Springsteen division, Jake, in the in the Sports Animal Fantasy Football League.
That's
so
right.
That should be interesting down the stretch.
Well, you know, it's a fun year, and I always love playing fantasy football with everybody up there, and you
me
guys, too. And I guess I'm 3-0 against the sports animal right now.
Yeah. No, that's impressive.
Hey, Jake,
and you know, Mark, too. Mark and I, when we were playing last year, Matt, you'll remember this, too. He had Dalvin Cook in the, I think it was in the first week of the playoffs, and he lost him because he got hurt, or it may have been right before that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Mark
yeah.
and I have a back and forth, you know, whenever we're playing each other, and we started this season out with the scheduling where I played Mark the first week and I play him the last week. And that was something after our draft. He was like, "You're kidding me." I was like, "No."
Well, hey, Mark's not here. So I think we can say this. He is at the bottom of the Springsteen division right now. So,
yeah, well, he went receiver heavy, and I know that's a strategy too in fantasy, you know, going for your big receivers, but a lot of those receivers, you know, they have a tendency. I mean, Mike Evans is always hurt, and I try to stay away from those guys. You know, I get the young, fresh ones playing for a contract.
Hey, Jake, thanks again so much for taking time for us today. We really, really appreciate it. We'll be listening as you go through the life and the legacy of Eddie Van Halen over there on the Cap. Thanks so much, man.
Awesome, guys. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. Jake is the program director over there at Rock 100.5. Man, what you want to talk about somebody that came on the scene. It's always difficult in music to completely blow somebody's mind with what you put out there right at the beginning, and that's something that they did on Van Halen 1, even though the critics were sort of like not really coming around on the staying power of hard rock music at the time,
right,
and what that meant. But like I said, you could tell the first time that you heard Van Halen 1 that there was something compared to what everything else that was going on out there, even harder rock verging on punk music, that there was something really, really special there. The combination.
Was he 23 when that album came out?
That's ridiculous.
23 years. Yeah. I mean, that's that makes me think of what I accomplished when I was 23 years old. I mean, there's not many people who can live up to that.
And I do want to say this: Eddie's been working on keyboards, and then the debut of 1984 on I think it was on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, whatever, midnight, when they played that on MTV, and a lot of people sort of bristled at that. Jump is a staple of musical culture. I know a lot of people don't get into it, and it's probably played out for a lot of other people, but I mean, that was a great moment. And that just kind of showed his range as a musician at the same time. So I'm not down on Jump. I think Jump is, if we just heard Jump for the first time, I think people would be pretty cool with it. It's just, it was Van Halen, and, then the last 20 years happened, and the last 20 million times that we heard it happened.
Yeah. It's like watching George Mikan play basketball. Like back then, he was everything.
But yeah, this guy's unstoppable.
Now looking at it through the filter we have now and after that, yeah, it's the same thing.
How do you think George Mikan would fare in today's modern NBA game?
That's a really interesting question, Gideon. I feel like he would be relegated to just like I think he'd be a good big man, but what would he average like?
Backup. You think like, George Mikan would be like a backup center?
I think he would probably start, but would he average
now,
12 and 10 or what?
If George Mikan, it was himself and started in AAU ball at 16, obviously, okay, he would tailor his game to, be a shooter and do things like that.
But he towered over everybody else, and that was the advantage he had, and that's why he was
Ripping George Mikan like that, man.
Hey, I love the Mikan drill. I love the Mikan drill. It made me very good at fundamental things.
My favorite part of the Mikan drill, the right-handed layup. My least favorite part had to be that left-handed layup.
See, I was the opposite because I'm a lefty, so.
All right, yeah. Great symmetry here. Coming up in our second hour, Cameron Jordan's going to join us to talk some high school sports and the headache that goes into trying to cover and prepare. And if you've got a kid playing high school sports or you're involved in any way, school athletics administration. So Cameron's going to kind of help walk us through that. Carson Cunningham from KOCO Channel 5 is going to join us 120, talk some OU and OSU football, and then we'll really hammer in on OU Texas with Joe Bettner at 1:30. Before we hand it off to the ultimate at 2:00. I'm Gideon Hamilton. Matt Ravis is here as well. This is the Monsters of the Midday, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal.
Call the sports animal of the luck.
Far, a little bit warmer today. It's a great day to go out and work out a little bit. Man, this has been so wild. Cameron Jordan is our next guest. Does a great job covering high school athletics for the Oklahoman. And Cameron, when we used to cover high school football on a weekly basis, you would sort of have a routine. You'd obviously try to keep tabs on everything that happened on Friday. And on Saturday, you could pretty much identify what some of the more important games were. You'd have a list already ready for each week, but you'd have a couple of surprises, and you go, well, all of a sudden this game is going to mean a little bit more. The routine is kind of out the window now, isn't it? Can you explain to me what this year has been like in terms of covering high school sports? And I'm sure there have been many weeks for you where it can be any day of the week and something goes off the board.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect way to describe it. It's just there's such an unknown right now with everything that's going on. I think the best example for me is a couple weeks ago, I was in Guthrie getting ready to cover a game between Piedmont at Guthrie, and about 2 hours before it was supposed to kick off, it got canceled. And so that's a perfect situation of having to scramble to find another game to go to, which thankfully there's still a bunch of games that are going on every single night. But yeah, like you said, there's with games being played on Saturdays now, and even the few games being played on Mondays, you know, there's just so much uncertainty and so much unknown every single week that, unlike like you said, you're so used to planning ahead and having a schedule even two, mm-hmm. three, 4 weeks out, but right now it's really just on a week-by-week basis, and that's about the same thing that all these teams are having to do.
Are things what has been the progression in terms of incidents or infections that you've seen as the season has gone along? Did it get a little bit worse right after school started? Are we still seeing the same number as this has gone along? Where are we in terms of that right now, Cameron?
You know, as far as game cancellations, it's been kind of around the 20 to 25 mark. You know, last week was the most, but you have to counter in that there were 10 games last week when you consider the 7 Oklahoma City high schools and the 3 Putnam City high schools that didn't play.
Yeah.
And so when you count in those 10 games that they've been playing the first 4 weeks of the year, that kind of shows why there's been a big spike in the number. But, you know, there's been about 20 to 25 every single week. It's kind of, like you said, it's kind of fluctuated a little bit toward the higher side, a little bit toward the lower side. Right now we're only at about 15 games that have been canceled for next week. But, you know, even with all these cancellations, a bunch of teams who've had games canceled are rescheduling games against each other. Like last week, perfect example is when Bixby and Carl Albert, who are in two separate classes, were able to reschedule a game because both of their opponents had to cancel. So there's been a lot of situations of that because teams still want to play that maximum 10 games if they have the opportunity to in the regular season. But you know, there hasn't really been a trend. You know, I know a lot of the infection numbers on the high school level haven't come from playing games on Friday nights or any athletic event in the fall, for that matter. Most of it is because of stuff that's happening in the classroom or stuff non-athletic wise. So that's always definitely a positive and a really good thing looking forward as we kind of get into these winter sports. But we're kind of been in that 20 to 25 range as far as game cancellations go.
Gotcha. Cameron Jordan is our guest. Does a great job covering high school athletics here in the state of Oklahoma for the Oklahoman. I know that David Jackson and some of his staff from the OSSAA had a meeting, I guess it was yesterday, and they were talking about state championships and planning moving forward. Go ahead and let us in on that. Is anything going to have to be changed, or is it as it was planned before the season?
It's as it was planned before the season. You know, two big things came out of yesterday with the OSSA held a regularly scheduled board meeting in the morning, and then a few members of the media got to talk with David Jackson in the afternoon. But the biggest thing that came out of the morning was the OSSA is planning on moving forward with all winter sports without any regulation. It's going to be the exact same as it was in the fall. The OSSA is really happy with how school districts across the state handled situations. If there was a school that had or a district that had an incident with COVID, they'd contact trace and isolate the kids that they needed to. If they were able to keep playing, they did. If they weren't, they shut down for 2 weeks. And they're really happy with how the schools responded to that and have their own guidelines for situations that happen. So they're going to keep doing that for all the winter sports. Obviously, with all of them being inside, basketball, wrestling, and swimming, it makes it a little more tedious just because a lot of those aren't obviously outside where you have more air and less chance of the virus hanging around kind of in the air where they say it can spread around more. So they're obviously cautiously optimistic is the word that David Jackson used when kind of looking at the winter sports. And the second big thing was that with state tournaments starting today, you have softball and fall baseball starting today.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is, and this is kind of a head scratcher because it's a lose-lose situation for the association. If a team, let's say one of the teams today of the 8 state tournament teams in softball in any of the classes, if one of them was to have a positive test and wasn't able to play, the OSSA is not going to postpone the tournament. There's a couple reasons why. One, yes, it stinks for those kids because they got to play the whole season, but then you possibly have it taken away when you get to the biggest part of your year. If you have to postpone the state tournament, one, you'd have to wait a couple weeks. Two, you're putting all the other teams at a disadvantage. Three, you'd have to be able to find another site.
Yeah.
And that's really, really difficult in a year that he already has had. The OSSA has already had a ton of issues finding sites and just making sure that you can have these championships. Actually, a great example, one of the first early morning games this morning, Amber Pocasset, which is a school down in near the Chickasha area,
sure.
They had only 9 players for their softball team who were able to suit up today.
Wow.
And they're one of the best teams in the state. We're one of the favorites coming in, but they actually lost their opener because they only had 9 players. And I'm assuming that they probably lost some starters. I'm not 100% sure, but that's kind of an example. If you have an opportunity to play, you can. If you have nine people who can play, you're going to. And that's obviously an unfortunate situation if you're going to have to see teams have to forfeit a game in the state tournament, but it's just something that may have to happen.
Go ahead, Matt Ravis.
Hey, Cameron, I got a question. Kind of this, and this is a more widescreen general one, but you know, talking about this Oklahoma Sooners defense and some of the talent that they've been able to bring in, you know, letting guys like a Kendall Daniels from Beggs get out of state. What do you make of that? Whenever that good of a player, you know, is not choosing in Oklahoma Sooners like that, is choosing to go out of state. What do you make of that?
You know, it is kind of weird. If you look in just in the past four seasons, arguably the top three defensive backs in the state, none of them have stayed in state. You have Josh Proctor, who is at Owosso. He went to Ohio State. And then you have Dax Hill, who is at Booker T, and he went to Michigan. And now with Kendall Daniels, he's a senior at Beggs this year, and he's committed to Texas A&M, and that's not going to change. So, yeah, it's obviously not encouraging when you look at OU and you see that arguably their biggest weakness over these past few years has been the defensive secondary, and that's the spot where they really need to have just better players, and you think that starts with recruiting. And when you look at these three players, like Kendall is already having a fantastic year. I know just last week he had 12 tackles and an interception to go along with almost 100 yards receiving and a touchdown on offense. Dax Hill has played a really big part last year as a true freshman at Michigan. I know he played in a bunch of games. And then Josh Proctor, he hasn't cracked the starting lineup yet, but he's also played in a bunch of big games and had a couple of really big hits in some national television games that I remember seeing and watching him. So you see all these kids who are making big-time plays for really big schools all across the country, and you wonder why it can't happen at OU. What does that come down to? I don't know. There's a bunch of different things. I don't know if it is more of a personal preference, because you know how recruiting is. It can be so finicky nowadays that these prospects lean one way and then can flip the other way. But, you know, it is a little bit weird that you think that all three of those defensive backs haven't stayed in state. But it is something that is probably a little bit concerning, just kind of looking at the future, because there's plenty more defensive backs coming up in the few years who I know that both OU and OSU have their eyes on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seemed, I mean, you talk about the pattern. That's what it started to look like to me. And your coworker, Nick Sardis, wrote this story in the Oklahoman back on August 1st when Kendall Daniels committed. And Kendall Daniels told the Oklahoman 10 days ago, OU called and received the offer. That's where I was going to go. I just decided to go to Texas A&M because it was between them two. Now, that's just his side of the story. I'm sure Oklahoma has one as well. But that's tough to figure out too, Cameron.
Yeah, and I think one of the things with that is when it comes to recruiting, I mean, and I know you guys know this, is usually those colleges, they only have a certain allotted number of spots for any position. And it can be, I think defensive back is probably, you probably try to get three or four defensive backs in a class. Well, if I remember correctly, OU had a kid from the Washington, D.C. area, I believe, who committed a couple days before Kendall did. And from my understanding of the whole situation, like I said, I'm not trying to put any words in anybody's mouth, but from my understanding of the situation, that scholarship was the last defensive back scholarship won. And so when it was taken up, OU had already kind of has a set plan for scholarships at other positions on the defensive side of the ball, and they didn't want to take a scholarship away from a linebacker or a defensive lineman or possibly even somebody on the offense to give to Kendall, even though he's that talented of a player, since someone else committed and they promised him that scholarship, it could mess up their recruiting in other areas. So that's the biggest reason that I understand why that offer was rescinded, but also it does make you scratch your head a little bit. You do want to get the best in-state players if possible. So that's where it's kind of just a really tricky situation.
Cameron Jordan is our guest. Does a great job covering high school athletics for the Oklahoman. We've got him for a couple more minutes here. I want to end on some good news, because it's been such a difficult year for players, student athletes, administrators, and everybody to kind of go through what they're going through right now with high school athletics. But in your mind, what are some of the best stories that people need to be cognizant out there of in terms of high school sports in Oklahoma, whether it's an incredible individual performance that's in the works so far this season or a team? Cameron, what do people need to be aware of that's going on out there?
I think one of the biggest ones, and if you follow high school sports, you've definitely heard his name because he's been around for 3 years, is Stillwater senior running back Quantrell Walker. Mm-hmm. He's rushed for a little more than 1,000 yards this year. He's averaging more than 10 yards a carry. He's only played four games, too. He's up to over 1,000 yards, and that's 15 touchdowns in four games. He's actually moved into the top 10 in the state's all-time rushing yards list. So that just kind of goes to show you he's the only person in the top 10 who's played at the Class 6A level, too. So he's going against what's considered the best competition in the state week in and week out, and he's still rushing for 250 yards a game. He's just been fantastic. Stillwater is really good again this year. You know, their only losses the last 2 years have come against Bixby, who Bixby's actually on the state's, has the state's longest win streak for an 11-man school at 29 right now. And they're actually, I got to see them last week and they played Carl Albert. They're another really good story. Just such a really, such a great football team. They have a junior running back, Braylon Presley, who is the younger brother of Brennan Presley, who's at Oklahoma State now. He was the state's Gatorade Player of the Year last year. Braylon may be better than his brother was. He has breakaway speed, incredibly fast. I mean, that whole family is just wildly talented. I know that they have an older sister who runs track at Ole Miss. And apparently the best football player is actually their younger brother who's in seventh grade right now. So the Presleys aren't going anywhere anytime soon. But no, those are a couple of the big ones. But definitely Quantrell Walker. Also, one more that, and I know that Matt is going to know this name, Luke Tarman, the quarterback at McGinnis. Yep. He's 21 touchdowns, 1,800 yards in five games this year. He's been just on a tear. You know, McGinnis lost a couple of really big names. Dominic Richardson, who's now running back at Oklahoma State, and Brendan Walker, who's a linebacker at OU. They lost production on both sides of the ball, and Tarman has stepped up, especially on that offensive side, and it's just been incredible this year. It's been awesome to see the numbers he's putting up week in and week out. A couple weeks ago, he had close to 500 total yards and seven touchdowns. So it's just it's incredible to see the kind of performances that he's been putting up. But really, those kind of three things are definitely some of the good things that are happening this year.
Cameron, we appreciate the insight as always. Keep up the great work, and hopefully we'll catch up with you somewhere on down the road.
Appreciate you guys for having me on.
All right. Cameron Jordan there covering prep sports for the Oklahoman. And, yeah, there has been no rhyme and no reason to this year. You just kind of have to keep your fingers crossed that your game is going to be played that week, not only for, you know, the excitement of playing, but also the health and safety of your teammates or people within your district there. So
you're just hoping you're, you know, when it does get canceled, you're not in the middle of traveling to, like, a Woodward, a Guymon, or, you know, some of the remote parts of the state. That may take 4 or 5 hours to get to.
That would be another headache. Some of the numbers that he was throwing around. I know you have personal experience with McGinnis, but Quantrell Walker to be a guy from a school at that level, and we've seen some amazing performances. 3A on down, where somebody just is physically dominant over schools that are that size. But this is something else, isn't it?
He mentioned where was he on the was he about to crack the top 10 at the all time?
Yeah, I think he did.
Of how many good running backs have come through this state. That is that is really impressive. That is really impressive.
That was enlightening there from Cameron Jordan. We're going to catch up with Carson Cunningham here in just a few minutes. We'll talk some OSU and OU football, and then we will really, really narrow our focus to OU and Texas this weekend. Joe Bettner is going to join us 1:35 to help us do that. NFL later on tonight, Tampa Bay and Chicago, each team at 3-1, so that's an important game for each of those two. Kickoff will be about 7:20 tonight, and then we do have some interesting baseball coming up later on this afternoon. First pitch, I think, has already happened between Atlanta and Miami as the Braves look to put away the Marlins virtually there. Oakland and Houston a little bit later on this weekend. This afternoon, go A's. Carson Cunningham will join us next. Am I alone in thinking that?
No, I don't think that you are. I just like that you had to sneak that in.
No, I mean,
you're usually very good at being impartial, Gideon. You just had to get that in there.
I like Oakland to begin with. I love these small market teams. Minnesota, I always cheer for the Twins, even though I don't know if they will win another postseason game in my lifetime. No matter what the circumstances. But, I always cheer for those small market teams that kind of have the deck stacked against them. So be a nice story in a number of different regards if Oakland were to come back and win that series, that's for sure. Carson Cunningham is next. I'm Gideon Hamilton. You're listening to the Monsters of the Midday. This is 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. Midday, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. Gideon Hamilton in for Mark and Dusty today. Lots going on around the sports world. Looks like Miami's put a couple on with one out there. Bottom first against the Braves. Keep you up to speed on baseball. Obviously, a lot of college football talk on today's show, and we will continue that with our good friend Carson Cunningham, who joins us now from KOCO Channel 5. Carson, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you saved the mandolin music intro for me. That's always my favorite. Appreciate
it. Oh, really?
That.
Okay, excellent. I've got one OSU question. I promise everyone we'll keep it OU Texas heavy. I've got
you, Homer.
I've got one OSU question I want to start off with.
I'm just kidding.
How much of this is still a mirage due to who they have and have yet to play?
I would say, I wouldn't say a majority of it, but there's definitely an aspect to that, Gideon. I'm not sitting here ready to say Oklahoma State's going to go undefeated and will stake their claim to the college football playoff. Yeah. Look, they've played quite the softest portion of their schedule to this point, but they have taken care of business. You can be impressive while playing a lackluster schedule, because we've seen a lot of really good teams go up to Lawrence and kind of sleepwalk their way through the first half or even the whole game in that scenario. So I'm very impressed so far with the defense. I think anyone who thinks that, you know, Shane Ellingworth is ready to just take the job from Spencer Sanders, I would pump the brakes on that. Has he been solid? Yeah. Yes. Has he showed his arm talent? Of course. But I do think, Gideon, they are built to compete and win a Big 12 championship. I thought that before the season. But I think you have to go back to the opener against Tulsa when they were at complete full strength. They were struggling to run the football against Tulsa. They were struggling to score touchdowns, move the football. Their defense really saved them in that game. So I'm not sitting here saying, yeah, they're ready to roll and win the Big 12 title. There's a lot left to be seen from them.
Yeah, obviously this four-game stretch coming up is going to tell us a lot about what they're capable of the rest of the year, if they're not only winning but winning comfortably. Obviously you feel good about that from an OSU standpoint. And a couple of these games, at least right now, in the very way too early stages of the season, are going to play a role in who's going to end up playing in that championship game, just because there's a couple of teams that are a little bit ahead of others right now. Let's go ahead and segue into OU Texas here. The OU thing is confusing to me, and it's perfectly fine if you disagree, because it seemed like to me watching that they were better than the two teams that they lost to. And if you've got a difference of opinion there, that's perfectly fine, because that's going to help me understand why they lost a little bit more. But these last two kind of left me scratching my head. What about you?
Well, I think Oklahoma, it's just a continuation of what we've seen. Just the biggest difference this year, Gideon, in those two losses is they don't have just an historically great offense. Like, OU hasn't had just the best offense in the country since Lincoln Riley's been there. They've had the best offense in the history of the sport. When you look at yards per play, every single metric points to them as historically great. Now that the offense is just really good, they can't bail out the defense. And that's what we've seen. That's why they've lost two games. The defense is still what they are, still what they've been. And it's, you know, it's all veteran players in the secondary, veteran players really across the board on defense for the most part without Kenneth Murray. And just, I think Oklahoma winning five straight Big 12 championships due to their offense and due to the historically great offenses has really kind of blinded us to the fact that they're still inept defensively. They're still basically a blue blood version of Texas Tech, where they've had to outscore teams despite their defense, and they're not getting any better on that side of the ball just yet. Now, that's where I think Alex Grinch has – I think he stemmed the tide a little bit last year. I thought he did a good job last year. He's starting to recruit much bigger defensive backs. But at what point have you seen enough from the undersized defensive backs that have been on campus for – you know, the secondary's got 90-plus starts, and we saw how they played. So, Gideon, it's just – it's more the same for me from Oklahoma. Just they've won a lot of close games to get to five straight Big 12 titles, and we've overlooked how bad their defense has been for during that stretch, just because they've had Heisman Trophy winners bailing them out time and time again.
The wizard of the whiteboard, Carson Cunningham, joins us now from KOCO Channel 5. What does this game this weekend actually mean? I suppose that it would mean if Oklahoma loses the game that they – it would have a virtually impossible road to climb back into a conference championship game. A Texas loss would more than likely mean the same thing for them. But in the grand scheme of things, I talked to a fellow that covers Texas a little bit earlier in the show, and he would say 4 years into the Tom Herman era, it would show there's way too much stagnation. This is a very, very important game for Texas here. And, you know, Lincoln Riley obviously wants to continue some positive momentum now that he's got a full class in and everything like this. So what does this game mean for both of these schools?
Well, it's certainly a fork in the road moment for Tom Herman. Look, he's fired his entire staff or demoted his entire staff, fired or demoted all of them. So there's one less. There's one move left to make if you're Texas, and that's get rid of the head coach. So, and if he can't beat Oklahoma this year, you have to wonder if the Texas fan base just gives up on him at this point. Because you're right, it's year four. You know, they've played Oklahoma close. I think they've covered the spread in seven straight games. So he's been competitive despite being totally outclassed for the most part since he's been on campus. That's usually a double-digit spread besides this year. And at some point, Gideon, you have to just say, well, this isn't working, and he's fired his whole staff. So it's much more important for Tom Herman. Lincoln Riley's built up enough equity. He's earned the right to have what they're calling a rebuilding year, a reloading year, because, look, they did lose their starting quarterback. They did lose some key players on defense. And we thought Oklahoma was impervious to a rebuilding year because they just kept on winning five straight Big 12 titles. Yeah. But it's clear that's kind of what they're going through right now with the retooling of the defense under Alex Grinch. So it's a massive, massive game for Tom Herman. I think if he loses, Gideon, I think a lot of people down in Texas are going to start talking about Urban Meyer, because it would be a seamless transition to bring him in as head coach, because Chris Ash used to be his defensive coordinator. Mike Yurcich was at Ohio State. He's familiar with him. So it would be kind of a seamless plug and play with Urban Meyer in there. Now, do you trust Urban Meyer staying more than a year or two? I don't know. But I think Texas is already restless. They lose this game, it's the final straw for Tom Herman.
Could be curtains, as Carson Cunningham calls for the head of Tom Herman on a plate. That'll be what comes out of this interview. We touched on this a little bit earlier from the conference teams that I sort of have zero faith in the rest of the way to really make a pick. Is there a team outside the state schools that you look at and you go, you know what, this team's pretty good, whether it's Kansas State, Iowa State, whoever it is, because I genuinely think that you could put these teams in a bag, shake them up, and somebody's going to come out there with two losses that is going to be pretty close or will play for a conference championship?
Well, I would say Iowa State and Kansas State, if they didn't stub their toe in the non-conference. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is about those two programs. They always do that in the non-conference, and it really, and then they'll come up and beat in Oklahoma once it gets to Big 12 play. I don't know what's going on with that, but I just could not be more impressed with Matt Campbell and what he's done at Iowa State. I mean, Oklahoma-Iowa State used to be the most lopsided series in Power 5. That's how bad Iowa State's been against Oklahoma, and now he's beaten OU twice. And they're really, if they could just win the non-conference, they could really make a run, because I think what he does offensively is really impressive. But Iowa State plays defense. They tackle you, which is a rare commodity in the Big 12. It's certainly rare at the Cotton Bowl this week. And I'm kind of surprised Matt Campbell hasn't moved on to a bigger job, because I think he's a big-time coach. Maybe he's waiting out Ohio State or a blue blood job like that. But I kind of point to Iowa State. I think they're in prime position to make a run and get to Jerry World.
Carson Cunningham is our guest. Does a great job for KOCO Channel 5, bringing us local stories. So let's expand a little bit here to the NBA, and it looks like it's going to be the Los Angeles Lakers again here. And what it gives me even more belief, other than I think they're probably better. They certainly have better top-level talent than Miami does. I think what actually helps them in this situation, even above the injuries and everything else, is what Denver did earlier in the postseason. I think that has really, really narrowed the focus for Los Angeles, both when they were up 3-1 against the Nuggets, and I think it will here again. So I would like the Lakers to go ahead and close it out here in five. But I wondered if you could talk about another crowning achievement for LeBron James, and particularly for Anthony Davis, who has been stellar here, hits the dagger in game four, and has really, really played well here in this postseason. Looks like it's going to be the Lakers putting another banner up.
Yeah, it certainly does. And Anthony Davis is by far and away the best teammate LeBron's ever had. By far. He's been exceptional. We all knew he was great before he got to LA, but he's really solidified his status. And you know, I'm Team Jordan. I think he's the greatest of all time. I don't think, even if LeBron wins another two titles, I don't think he's better than Jordan. I was old enough to watch Jordan in his prime. There's no beating that guy. The guy never went to a game seven in the NBA finals. His record speaks for itself. But what I will say is LeBron is the closest thing we've ever seen to a Michael Jordan in terms of his dominance, in terms of just being the alpha for so long in this league. And I just think, you know, we all tend to debate, you know, Jordan, LeBron, Jordan. That's going to turn into more of a debate when he wins the title this year. But it's just, like, we can just appreciate what he is. He's this generation's Jordan. I think when LeBron's retired, we're going to look back and we'll tell all the young kids who weren't old enough to watch LeBron that look, it was unbelievable to watch this guy play. And what separates him from Jordan is just how long he's played. I mean, he's going to play for two decades. Whereas Jordan, you know, we had the break, and then he came back with the Wizards later on. And just LeBron's sustained dominance is truly unbelievable. The fact that he's not sustained any major injuries really throughout his career is even more remarkable, as physical as he is and how he gets beat up. But it's strange, though, Gideon. This is kind of where the NBA is now, right? A team that's just totally made through free agency and trades. There's no drafting or sustaining, you know, talent, you know, homegrown talent. That's kind of what the Lakers are really kind of reinventing the wheel, and I think we're going to see much more of that in the NBA now that everyone's moving to short-term contracts.
Hey, real quickly, before we let you go here, any timeline on the Thunder coaching search or coaching announcement? It's not like there's any sense of urgency there, but any feelings on when that might happen in relation to the draft, which is a little over a month from now?
I will be watching my inbox when the email gets sent out, because Sam Presti keeps everything so tight-lipped. I don't think there's any way, you know, when trades are involved and other teams are involved, word can kind of leak out what Presti's up to. But just think about the NBA draft, getting, you got Woj tweeting out information on every team, and then when the Thunder are on the clock, it's radio silence. There's no word coming out of the Thunder. So your guess is as good as mine, but I am pretty confident they're going to hire a young assistant coach without head coaching experience. Maybe a David Vanterpool is one of my favorites. But knowing Sam Presti, it's going to be a young guy that we kind of have to Google, kind of like on draft night when they drafted Darius Bazley. That's kind of Mark Daynault, who's been with the team for a long time. He's certainly a candidate, but I think it's going to be a young, unproven assistant. That's kind of the way I view things.
Carson, we appreciate your perspective. As always, thanks for giving us your time today. I appreciate it.
No problem, Gideon. Anytime.
All right. Carson Cunningham there from KOCO Channel 5. And if you've ever scrolled through the guide, people still have cable, for these morning and afternoon talk shows, what's amazing to me is the info is always the same, only it's used differently. So-and-so offers his unique perspective. And then on some, it's unique take. And then on others, it's always tackles the topics in the world of sports, but it's always in like different order, but it's virtually the same thing. There's always unique perspective is in there somewhere.
Sure.
And so I always found that kind of funny.
It's like Mad Libs.
I went through like five or six of them one time, and you're like, okay, I think the same person might have written this.
It's probably a computer. A computer that wrote that.
Okay. Five? Lakers in five?
It seems that way. It seems that way, although I just don't want to quit this Heat team, Gideon. I just don't want to say it's over for them. Mm-hmm. So
here's the thing about the Heat. I admire them. I admire their tenacity. Timely three-point shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be anybody. Yeah. I'm serious. That could be any with how many threes that they've hit late in games. It has been wild to watch how well that they've executed perimeter shooting late in games. And that literally could be Boston. It could be anybody. Now, there is something that sets the Heat apart in their ability to defend and just how many guys that they have that can space the floor. Of course, that's what sets them apart. That's why they're here. But you put any team in that situation and say, hey, you're going to make every single one of these shots, right? Then
there's a reason they were on pace to win 48 games in the regular season, and usually you don't see, you know, if in a year if a team won 48 games in the regular season, you give them no shot at winning the NBA finals.
Duncan Robinson is actually, I saw this the other day, I don't remember who saw it, but Duncan Robinson, they said, is going to change the way a lot of teams draft. That they are really, really going to be locked in on later picks on shooting. That's how important that he's been to the process. We're going to switch gears. We'll move back into the OU-Texas game this weekend. Joe Bettner does as good a job as anybody covering the OU Sooners for the Norman Transcript. Joe will join us next to offer his unique insight and perspective and tackle the world of sports, some of those topics with us. That is next. I'm Gideon Hamilton. You're listening to Monsters of Midday, 98.1 FM, WWLS Sports Animal.
This is Matt Pinto. Check out the latest edition of the Thunder.
98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. Gideon Hamilton in for Mark and Dustin. Monsters of Midday about to hand the baton to the Ultimate. Jim Traber will be along here in just about 15 minutes or so, but not before we continue to get you prepared for the big game coming up this weekend between OU and Texas. And he does a phenomenal job covering Sooner Athletics for the Norman Transcript. Our good friend Joe Bettner joins us now. Joe, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Is OU better than Kansas State and Iowa State?
I think so. I think Kansas State for sure. I struggle with the Iowa State aspect of things because I do think that Matt Campbell runs a really good program and he has a lot of talent that I think that if Lincoln Riley in a weird universe could like pick a few players off of their team, I think he would take a Breece Hall or a Charlie Kohler. So they've got a good group. But yeah, and it's also Iowa State's defensive front. But I these past two games, Oklahoma, you should have beaten Kansas State. You should have beat Iowa State probably if you, don't let up a long kick return. So I think OU is probably better than what their record indicates, just has not gone their way so far in 2020.
Yeah. Well, I mean, defensively, it's no secret that's an issue. Is that the biggest issue in your mind? You're talking about close games and you're talking about pivotal plays within those games. But from the grand scheme of things, is that the biggest troublesome area for OU, or is it their inability to run the football? Is it just the fact that they don't have a guy that can create 6 or 7 extra seconds on a play at quarterback if they need to? I know it's a combination of all those things, but what's the major sticking point here?
I mean, it's probably the correct answer is it's a combination, but I do think that Spencer Rattler's in a very tough spot, as you know, he might end up, and I'm not saying he is right now, but he might end up being the most talented of any quarterback Riley has had to this point. But he definitely has, the most inconsistent offensive line, running backs, and defense of the previous quarterbacks. And so that's kind of hampering what he's been able to do. And I think that if OU's in a universe where they have a more consistent offensive line play and can establish the run early and don't have to rely completely on Spencer Rattler, then I think that they're in a much better position. Maybe I'm just too resigned to the fact that the defense is going to be what it's going to be until, Alex Grinch gets some of those guys, those freshmen, who I think a lot of people are probably getting a little bit antsy, wanting them to get in soon rather than later. But you got to realize that they did not have a complete off season. They didn't have a normal off season by any means. And so it's just tougher for some of those younger guys to usurp some of the roles that are held by a secondary that, mostly returned to everyone, really, from last year, other than Parnell Motley. But it's, I think if they can get some of those issues corrected on offense, you might see a trickle-down effect. And I think if Ronnie Perkins does, in fact, play this weekend, the defense can, take another step as far as, he obviously, Ronnie Perkins doesn't play defensive back, but if he can put pressure on Sam Ehlinger, then that's going to obviously open up some doors for those defensive backs to make some more plays.
And the non-analytical Joe Bierkan in me, looks again at these close games where they didn't make plays. And over the past few years, covering the team, they've had countless close games. Two teams going for two-point conversions, not getting them. Last-minute drives that have sort of always gone Oklahoma's way, with the one lone exception of every season when they lose and then inevitably find their way back into the college football playoff. I understand that's the mark of a great team, but they're have to exist some law of averages in this world, Joe.
For sure. And I wrote about that this weekend. I wrote a column and about just OU's kind of luck with these games. And it tends to go that way sometimes, where you have a year like last year that I think that OU, and you can make the argument that Jalen Hurts is maybe Jalen Hurts doesn't put OU in some of these positions this season, because he's a veteran guy, but I think at the same time, they overachieved quite a bit with some of the wins that they were able to pull out against Iowa State and Baylor and TCU. And now on the flip side of things, that you've got these close games, they're just not going quite your way. And Lincoln Riley's done a really good job winning, in the clutch. And I believe it's he's won 14 games by 7 points or less, or 10 points or less. And he's lost, I believe, 5 of such games. So it's, he's really been good at winning those tight ball games. It's just, Yeah, I think you're dead on, though, with just the law of averages. And I know maybe not everyone believes in, you know.
Sure. No, I understand.
That, but it's definitely something that's affected OU in the past. And I think you're kind of seeing it now that, you know, you can't be as clutch as you always are. It's just it doesn't always play out that way, I guess.
It goes across all sports. If you put yourself in too many close situations, there's nothing that you know, definitively says that you're going to trip up a couple of times, but just we know historically that that will tend to happen the more and more you find yourself in those situations. Suspensions coming to an end soon?
I believe so. I mean, I was linking about Ronnie Perkins on Monday, and he said nothing has changed with his status, and I believe that there's some stuff that he has to get. There are some things that I think still, you know, you need to dot some I's, cross some T's type things. But I do believe the overall thought process is that Ronnie Perkins will play. And then, you know, you should get back Ramondre Stevenson, Trajan Bridges in 1 to 2 games. And that's also something that really can open the door for Oklahoma to be a better football team. I mean, you get Ramondre Stevenson back in there, and maybe you don't have these running issues because he's a guy that's, you know, much more proven than a T.J. Pledger. But I do think that Seth McGowan's a really good back. And then having Trajan Bridges, man, that, you know, I never thought that receiver would be like a difficult spot for OU, but they're really kind of lacking. You know, when your best receiver is an H-back and Austin Stogner, it's just a little bit troubling. Charleston Rambo, I feel like, has been a little bit of a disappointment. But when they can get Trajan Bridges back and also Jaden Hazelwood from injury, then, you know, that offense, I think, can probably take the shape that I think we were expecting it to at the beginning of the year.
You solicited info from fans going to the game this year. Is that for this weekend, or is that for what they say it was like this year for after the fact?
No, so that'll actually be in tomorrow's paper.
Okay.
I spoke with quite a few fans, and it is, you know, there's, you know, it seems like everyone, at least from who I talk to, and it's a small sample size, but it seems like fans are in good spirits, and, you know, going to OU Texas is still a big deal, even when the team is 1-2 and there's a pandemic going on. But it's going to be a different atmosphere, and not having a state fair around it's definitely going to be odd. And, you know, not having, 50,000 Longhorn fans, 50,000 Sooner fans, is going to be, you know, take away somewhat from the experience, but I think mostly everyone's pretty excited to get down to Dallas and, you know, have that, as different as it will be, some sense of normalcy, I guess, with the season.
Well, and there will be a particular establishment that will be open near the stadium, according to you. What is it that makes Fletcher's legendary? Is it the fact that they say corny dog instead of corn dog? Is it the texture, the flavor? Is it that it's associated with a big event? What is it?
I think that, and I, you know, I don't want to romanticize corny dogs right now, but I mean, they truly just, it's the perfect, like, amount of batter.
Okay.
It's like they fry it just perfectly. You know, I don't recommend eating it without mustard, but I think you don't have to have mustard. I think it's just good as is. It's just it's just everything you want in, you know, a corny dog, and like it's everything you want at a state fair. It's simple, and, you know, just kind of, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, just as much as it sounds weird, but like when you're in that line and you can smell it, and you inch closer and closer, and you can. You know, you feel that aroma hit your face. It's just, there's nothing like it, especially at 9 a.m. on a Saturday. It's just, it's perfect.
The physical sensation that's added to the taste of Fletcher's. Joe, we appreciate you painting that very vivid picture for us, and we'll look forward to your coverage of the game this weekend as well. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much, and I'm down to talk corny dogs anytime.
Okay, anytime. We will keep that in mind. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate that. Never had one. Not a corn dog, but a Fletcher's.
You know what? Everybody's had a corn dog. You know what time? It's also, you said 9 a.m. What time it's also really good is at about 4, 4:30, you know, once you get out and So you go into there, you're shoulder to shoulder with everybody.
I thought you were about
everybody.
To tell me 4:30 in the morning.
Well, that too, depending on what kind of night.
I think a lot of our listeners would agree with that.
No doubt. But no, after you've been shoulder to shoulder with everybody, it can kind of be a long day. You know, you get up early, 11 a.m. kickoff. After the game, get in. There's nothing better. Nothing better. Nothing better.
Fletcher's. That was, that was like I was reading, you know, one of my grandma's romance novels there for a while.
Sure.
The way that he was painting that picture for us.
It can be that way. It can be that way.
Again, quite a sensation. Okay, so you and I will not talk prior to the game. So let me go ahead and give you my thoughts. Like I said with Craig, I picked OU 59-45 over Texas. I think it'll be a game, unless there's a lot of turnovers and things like that that'll halt momentum and scoring drives, obviously. I think it'll be a game where both teams can take advantage of a prone defense. But it is interesting, and the reason why we get, you know, somebody who covers Texas on and somebody who covers OU on is so that we can hear, you know, sort of the different mindsets down there. Now, some of these teams are just not going to be good enough in a certain position grouping to be able to do anything about this, but this game is important for both sides. And if you're Tom Herman, you can certainly feel the pressure of needing a minor miracle to beat Tech, losing at home to TCU, who I don't think is, at the end of the day, going to be very good. They very well could prove me wrong. And then losing to your biggest rival.
To me, it's usually, and this may not always be true, but usually it's the team that has more pressure on them coming into that game seems to perform a little bit tighter, more, trying to play not to lose. So that certainly could work out in OU's favor. But as all OU fans know, there's a lot of pressure on the Sooners heading into this game too. So maybe those factors cancel out. All that said, I mean, this is a game where you just kind of have to throw out a lot of the stuff that happens before the game. And I think both defenses definitely have their struggles. One thing Texas does have that OU doesn't is an experienced veteran quarterback, and that will certainly help.
Conor McGregor says he will fight Dustin Poirier, but that the fight must happen in 2020. I wonder why. Connor said in his tweet, I accepted the offer to fight. You told him it has to happen in 2020. I'm ready for November 21st, given recent injury issues as well as any of the December dates. I will still donate $500,000 to charity. So, I mean, why wait here?
So Conor McGregor already fighting.
He says he will fight as long as this fight happens in 2020. Poirier's a warrior, but he's been getting blasted in his last couple of fights before winning. So that would be an interesting fight, and I'd be excited to see it. But I wonder why he wants to go ahead and do this now rather than waiting for a time where, you know, get some people in the building and whatnot.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Update from the Braves Marlins, no score there, top three, base were loaded last inning, nothing came of that. Oakland and Houston a little bit later on today, Rays, Yanks, and Dodgers, Padres, what a fantastic series that has been so far. Bucks and Bears tonight, 7:20 kickoff, so Al will be able to tell you about the first score in that one as each of those teams looking to improve to 4-1. Want to thank our great lineup today. Joe Cook from Inside Texas. Again, follow him on Twitter at JosephCook89 as he goes through virtually every important play of each of Texas's game to kind of understand what some of their strengths and weaknesses are. If you're a big OU fan, I would consider that a pretty valuable resource. Also, might be fun to do that on his feed if OU wins this game over the weekend, as Joe will have to take the task of doing that. I also want to thank Jake Daniels from 100.5 The Cat for coming on, talking some Van Halen for a while. Rest in peace, Eddie. Cameron Jordan from the Oklahoman talking some prep sports with us and the headache of covering that and trying to schedule it. Carson Cunningham from KOCO Channel 5 and the Norman Transcripts, Joe Bettner. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. The ultimate Jim Traber is next for Matt Ravis. I'm Gideon Hamilton. You've been listening to Monsters of the Midday. This is the leader in sports, the sports animal.
Join the sports animal at our new OU 10.